Good evening. I join Bob in welcoming so many of our members and their guests. It is both a pleasure and a privilege to welcome Dr. William R. Hite, Jr. to the Athenaeum. His appearance will offer us the opportunity to hear a progress report on Philadelphia's public schools, and at the same time to recall the Athenaeum's historic role in the city's public education. Abolitionist, jurist, and philanthropist Robert Vaulks, after whom one of our schools in this town is named, joined the Athenaeum in 1815 as member number 3. He then served as the first president of the Board of Public Schools in the early 19th century. Shortly thereafter, for 3 decades, the school board had its main offices on the Athenaeum's first floor, and there, in 1857, the National Education Association was founded. Tonight, in this room, that past meets this present. Dr. Hite was appointed superintendent of Philadelphia's public schools in June 2012. Philadelphia School District is the largest in the Commonwealth and one of the largest in the country. Prior to joining the School District of Philadelphia, Dr. Hite was superintendent of Prince George's County Public Schools in Maryland, that state's second largest district. He previously served as an assistant superintendent in Georgia's Cobb County School District, supporting over 100,000 students. In addition, Dr. Hite has taught at a number of universities, including Virginia State University and the University of Maryland. Dr. Hite's professional experience includes service at every level: teacher, principal, central office administrator, and superintendent. His consistent focus throughout his distinguished career has been on equity, innovation, and quality. Join me in welcoming Dr. William Hite.
Thank you and good evening, everyone. It is a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to be in the facility that hosted the first Board of Education here in Philadelphia. And considering the fact that I have a board meeting coming up next Thursday, I'm glad to be here with you this evening. It is an opportunity to talk a little bit about what we're trying to do here in the School District of Philadelphia. And it's great to do this or have this talk in such a historic facility. I want to thank the shareholders, I want to thank the members, and I want to thank all of you for being here to at least hear a part of what we're trying to accomplish here in Philadelphia. In addition, I'm going to work through a couple of slides, talk a little bit or establish some context, and that context will be the things on which we've worked and the things on which we plan to focus on as we move forward. And then I generally, in these types of talks, leave some room for questions or comments or suggestions or recommendations. And one thing that I've found in my now 6 years here in Philadelphia is that individuals here in the city tell you what they think, whether you want to hear it or not. But I do want to hear what you have to think about what we talk about this evening. And so I want to begin just providing a glimpse at some of the things that we started the year with this year. And this is purposeful. And the reason I'm doing this is because it's very different than how we started the years in my previous 4 years here in Philadelphia. And so if you can see that we celebrated improved attendance, we have now begun a program where children will graduate from high school with not only a high school diploma, but with an associate's degree. We have, for the first time in a decade, credit agency rating upgrade here in Philadelphia. And we looked at approaching our facilities with a view towards looking at academic repairs. And we won a national award for environmental sustainability. And that is all a part of our plan that we're trying to do with at Green Futures. And how do we create sustainable, renewable and energy sources? And how do we conserve energy? And more importantly, how do we teach our young people to do that and to practice that on a day-to-day basis. And so, as you know, these are very different highlights than individuals are used to hearing about the school district, but I think it's really important that we start talking about a lot the positive things that are happening with the 206,000 roughly children who are educated in public schools here in Philadelphia. Because when one thing goes bad and we unfortunately allow that one thing to paint a picture of all 206,000 children, that's not the story about Philadelphia. Instead, it's the other 206,000 children who are doing things well and who are learning and who are coming to school and graduating and doing magnificent things as they move forward. So last year was a part of a year of investments for us. And as I talked about on the first slide, this is even different because you know that investments are very different than closures, cuts, layoffs, eliminations, reductions. And those are some of the things that we had to do in order to get to make ends meet. But now we're talking about investments, and we're in the middle of a $526 million investment plan. And that investment plan includes things from new technologies to hydration stations. And hydration stations are a fancy word for what used to be water fountains when I was in school, right? So it's a fancy word for those. But now we have hydration stations that have filtered water, and we have installed now 3 in every school in the city of Philadelphia. And new contracts with our teachers and our principals, and many of whom who went without for many years, 4 years to be exact, for teachers and principals actually took a reduction in pay. And so we're proud to have new contracts with all of that. And for the first time, Philadelphia, the school district of Philadelphia, has settled all contracts with all unions in the district, and so pleased about that. We also did a detailed facility condition assessment, and that detailed facility assessment gives us information about how to prioritize our dollars, our capital dollars, on properties or on schools that are in disrepair. And the reason we did that assessment was to understand which ones should be the highest priorities in terms of making sure that buildings were safe and not in disrepair. And we're continuing our effort to build on climate and cultures in schools. And so the $526 million, and these are a few bullets, a lot more things included with that amount of money. But nonetheless, it is a set of investments we're making in schools here in Philadelphia. And those investments are beginning to pay off. And one of the things that we have talked about, and I will continue to talk about, is the progress that the district is making. And one of the things that's really important, when I arrived here in Philadelphia almost 6 years ago, we had almost 20 schools on the state's persistently dangerous list. And that is because of incidents that were happening in schools or crimes that were being committed in schools. Today, I'm pleased to say that this is the third year where we have 0 schools on that state list, and it is about the work that we've done around climates and cultures. And we didn't eliminate that by focusing on putting more police officers in schools, but instead we focused on it by changing and working towards understanding our young people, establishing relationships with them, and building the climates and cultures that were conducive to young people feeling safe and secure and respected and loved in schools. And so one of the things that we are showing here is that we collect information from all schools, district and charter schools, every year. And that information is a part of our accountability framework. And this year, when we collected that information, we saw that 75% of our schools had improved climates. And it is not just something where we're seeing indicators go down or indicators reduce, but we're also having parents, teachers, principals, and students themselves tell us that they feel better in their building or in their schools. 99% of teacher vacancies were filled for the last 2 years, and we're going to continue to focus on that. But one of the things I want to do is actually change that conversation from one of recruitment to one of retention. And how do we think about making sure that great teachers, great principals, and great families who begin an experience here in Philadelphia remain here in Philadelphia? And that's why that's part of the investment. We also are seeing progress on state assessments. Those assessments include the state assessments around from third grade through eighth grade. Those are called the Pennsylvania State Assessments, PSSAs, and then the high school exams, the Keystone exams. So we saw in all grades, we saw improvements in those areas. And most significantly, we saw improvements with the number of children reading on grade level at the third grade, which is a focus of our work, and it has been a focus of our work over the past several years. More children are graduating. We have an announcement this Thursday where we will have from our high schools, the number now is creeping up to around 78% of the young people graduating. And if you may recall, when Mayor Nutter started as mayor, that number was at 50% graduating from high school. And so really focused on that. I talked earlier about the U.S. Green Ribbon Award that only went to several locations around the country. Philadelphia was one of 9 jurisdictions that was recognized. We've also done something else, and we looked at this, and some of you may recall when you were in, if kindergarten was even offered, because I don't think kindergarten was offered in when I was coming through school. I just started in first grade. But one of the things that is really important is that we were having large numbers of children being suspended from kindergarten. And we were trying to think, what in the world is going on with such large numbers of children? And so we eliminated suspensions. And I'm going to talk about that because that's a really important piece of building a climate and culture and dealing with the child's behavior and the symptoms or the root cause of those behaviors versus just sending a child home. And that's one thing that we've been focused on as we think about our climates. And then tomorrow, I head to Washington, D.C., and in Washington, we're going to be celebrated because General George A. McCall School was just awarded a National Blue Ribbon School, which is one of the highest honors from the U.S. Department of Education. The McCall School joins Penn Alexander, that was a Blue Ribbon School last year, and in the previous year, Hill Friedman was also named a Blue Ribbon School. And so investments are leading to progress. They're not just, it's not just spending money, but instead it's also leading to outcomes that are changing. And as those outcomes change and people say, well, what are you going to focus on next? And one of the things that I think is important is we have to maintain a focus on the work that we have started. And we have what we call anchor goals. And we have 4. And those 4 goals are simply making sure our students graduate with the ability to move on to college if they so choose or into the job of their choice. Or the second goal is in order to do that, we know that literacy is everything. And so we want to increase the numbers of children who are reading on grade level by the time they're 8 years old. And that number has already increased because this slide is old. And as well as Anchor Goal 1 has also increased. In order to do those first 2, we need the best teachers and principals in our schools. And in order to do all of those things, we need the funding necessary to do those things. And so we will continue focusing on our goals. And when we focus on the goals, we look at things that children do. And we continue to do what works in order to meet those goals. And so here's some examples for the first goal, graduating from high school with the ability to go to college or career, looking at making sure children come to school first. Because we know that we can spend $526 million, but if children don't come to school, we don't have a chance or an opportunity to teach those young people to read, to do math, to problem solve, to think critically, or anything for that matter. We're also focusing on 9th grade because research tells us that that's the most important grade of getting children through high school. And we've opened 2 new high schools this year. We reopened the Vox high school, and we reopened it as a, with a partnership with an organization called Big Picture. And Big Picture, it runs an internship-based program where students actually experience a job or work as a part of their high school experience. And it's a, in a program of study, and we contracted with them to run the school in partnership with Big Picture and the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. The second school is Parkway Middle College. This was one of, this used to be Parkway Center City. And Parkway Middle College is the school that I was talking about earlier, where the young people who started in the ninth grade at Parkway this year started on the campus of the Community College of Philadelphia. And when they started, they were starting on a pathway to meet the graduation requirements and receiving a diploma from the School District of Philadelphia, and simultaneously they will receive an associate's degree from the community college. That is, we are now running the only middle college in Pennsylvania. And so we're thrilled that that is here in Philadelphia. And we took in 125 children to that program. The program is in its early stages. I did this in another district where I worked, and I thought that it would begin to attract attention. And I remember talking to a 13-year-old from the Northeast, and I asked her what she was excited about on the first day of the summer. They actually start in the summer for a summer program to teach them college-level skills. And she looked at me and she said, "I'm so excited." I said, "Well, why are you so excited?" She says, "Because I'm 13 and I'm starting college." And I thought about it, then I got excited, right? But it was, it's those types of experiences that we want to provide for young people. And now we're in the second phase. We're looking for the next class for Parkway Center City. And so it should not surprise anyone that there are 1,200 applicants for the 100 slots for next year. And so it is something that we are considering a success. In addition, we're looking at attendance, particularly with their younger grades. That's one of the reasons we had to say, stop sending kindergartners home. We want them in school, especially when they're learning to read. And we have now put early literacy coaches in all kindergarten through third grade classes in our lower grades. And we have now level libraries in all of our schools and new learning spaces, particularly in our lowest performing schools. And all of these are things that we're doing around the second anchor goal. To build on that, I wanted to share with you a video that is around early literacy. And many of you, particularly those of you who are in education, and I know I saw some colleagues and friends in the as I was walking in, and I know that we were working on this on Read by Four and other citywide initiatives around literacy. But one of the reasons literacy is so important, because if we are able to teach children to read by the time that they're 8 years old, then many of the things that then you would have to do if they don't learn to read could then become a part of the investments and the types of experiences that we want those children to have as they learn through reading. And so if they don't learn to read, then the amount that we spend per child only increases on the remediation, on the interventions, on getting those children up to speed. And they're less likely to graduate from high school, to attend school regularly, or to go off to college. And so one of the things that, one of the primary factors is making sure that we have a citywide effort around teaching children to read. Wrong click. Teaching children to read gives them a foundation for success throughout the rest of their lives.
If you can't read, there's not very many things that you'll be able to go further in.
You need reading for everything.
If you go to a restaurant, you have to read the menu.
If you're on the highway, you need to read the signs.
When you go to high school, they give you hard books, and when you go to college, you get more and more.
In 2014, we set aspirational goals for the School District of Philadelphia. Our four anchor goals reflect our belief that all children can learn and succeed. They're the core of our work to create great schools close to where children live.
and they have an unyielding focus on early literacy.
What does it say here? Look at this word, chunky.
Reading is very difficult, and many of our children come lacking a lot of those skills. They don't get read-alouds at home, someone to read to them. As a teacher, you must know each child and help them with their needs. You see the kid who can answer, who can comprehend, who's still having problems with vocabulary, because every child comes with their own needs and their own interests.
We know that a curriculum doesn't teach children, but teachers do. So we have to make sure that those skills that the teachers have address the needs that the children have. And for that to happen, they need to be experts. And they need the support from reading specialists and coaches to be able to do that, because teachers come to us at many different levels.
She knew 43 out of 60 words.
Mm-hmm. The way a reading specialist helps teachers is to not only do walkthroughs and sit with the teachers, but collaborate in planning. Observe what's going on, look at the data, and then see how I can help that teacher to bring it up a notch and really hone into the areas that the gap is the biggest. That's the only way that we can get our kids to move up, if the teacher becomes a better instructor.
Yeah, some of the things I'm learning with working with a CI teacher is how to find strategies in a small group instruction to be able to empower my students and to help them learn how to read.
It's important that students read at grade level by the end of third grade, because the children who are not reading at grade level are four times as likely to drop out of high school. And that in itself should be reason enough for us to do a better job in getting all our kids reading.
In school year 2017-18, all elementary schools will have participated in the Early Literacy Summer Institute. All kindergarten through third grade teachers will have the support of an early literacy coach, and all of their classrooms will have level libraries so we can put the right books in the hands of our children.
The feeling when they see that they can connect to a book is, it just gives them confidence. The confidence that they can do this and they want to read more.
When I learn anywhere, it makes me feel happy.
And every time I see this, the same word, I can read it. It makes me feel a little proud.
As a parent, early literacy is important to me because I want my son to be the best he can be. I want him to grow up and be confident and be strong.
Anything that you decide to do in life, you're gonna need to know how to read.
To my child have that knowledge about literacy, it's like opening the doors of the world. It's essential for the child's success.
Ensuring that all of our students are reading on grade level by the end of the third grade creates the foundation for everything that comes after. Children must learn to read so that they can learn through reading. And then, as we talked about, and I wanted to provide that video because it's just a video that we use that highlights the work that we've done around early literacy. That was, a lot of that was filmed at Munoz Marin over in North Philadelphia. And it is one of the things that we continue to focus on as we do our work. But we also continue to, and you heard in that video about summer institutes. And so we're looking at more and better and targeted development or training, particularly around our teachers, especially in elementary schools. I talked earlier about teacher retention and looking at how do we create videos of best practice. And we have now a video library that is created by teachers, and the teachers video themselves doing something that they do well, and then we codify that, we put all of those videos together, and then they're by topic, and other teachers can come in and look at the videos of how to do one of those things well that the teacher just highlighted. And that goes across all grades, across all schools. And really thinking about it from the perspective of how do we develop and continue to develop those individuals who are standing in front of children. And rounding out our efforts for the new school year, and as we think about this work moving forward, and this is, I think, also a progress point, and looking at focusing now, again, on art and music. Art and music was one of the things that we unfortunately had to cut as we were going through significant budgetary times. And now I'm happy to say that we now have more music and art teachers in our school district than we had when I arrived. So not only did we add back all of those who were cut, we actually have employed a lot more. And we're working towards making sure that every first through fifth grader has an experience with music and art at their school. In addition, we're looking at resources for our students who are English language learners and our students who are immigrants in the immigrants here in the school district, and looking at what the training needs are for all of those young people and the individuals who work with those young people. We've already eliminated suspensions in kindergarten, and now we're actually focused on first and second grade, because when people stop suspending kindergartners, then somehow they turn their attention to first and second grade, and those children started going home. But one of the things that's really important is that if there's a reason we focus on reading from the time a child is born to the time a child is 8 years old. Why? Because that's when the most significant development happens with those young people. And it is a great opportunity. And so, as I indicated before, if children are not at school, we can't educate them, or we can't teach them to read. And so one of the things that's really important is focused on making sure children are there every day, including those children that sometimes misbehave for various reasons. And I think about this, and I think I have a grandson. He's 5 years old. He started kindergarten this year, and he is, I think he's a, naturally, we all think our grandchildren are great, but I think, I mean, he does all of these things. He could do all of these things with technology, and he asks a lot of questions, and he listens, and so you have to be careful when you're talking around him, because I found that out when he was 3 years old, because he would listen to something, hear something, and then research it when he was three. And you know how he researched it? Siri. He researched it on Siri. And so for a young man where he is exposed to information that's democratized, that is ubiquitous, that's free, then I was anticipating his struggle when he got to school, when he got to kindergarten. And guess what? He's been on yellow three times already. And when he's on yellow, and my daughter keeps saying, "Dad, what do I do? Dad, what do I do?" And I said, ask a lot of questions. Find out what is making him misbehave. And so she did, and she asked those questions, and she came back and she said, I asked the teacher, and she said, he finishes his work in 10 minutes. And then he's trying to get the attention of everybody else who's still working. And it's what I expected. And so part of that is, part of how we're thinking about this work is, so if children his age at five are used to exploring and touching and being inquisitive, then for us to put them in a box and say, sit here, face this way, be quiet, is an unrealistic expectation. And one of the things that I want to make sure is that at least the children here in Philadelphia, and thank goodness my grandson hasn't been suspended yet, but I don't want the children here in Philadelphia suspended either. Not if in fact there are things that they are have already completed and they're just interested in not being bored. Or they have been exposed to significant trauma, and we suspend them instead of addressing the trauma. And so part of what we have to do is to move to eliminate suspensions in first through second grade. It's all about creating a different climate for our young people. And those climates are also things like play spaces, and really focusing on playgrounds and play spaces and outdoor learning spaces for children, which we have now added 16. And we're going to continue to work on that as a part of our capital plan. Improving science, technology, engineering, and math experiences for young people, And we have several, quite a few schools that are, where children are coding in the third grade, but really thinking about how do we start and make sure they're problem solving. And really building what we call a growth mindset culture, where individuals don't look at their children and their intelligence as being fixed, but intelligence as something that with the right effort and abilities, we can grow and expand. And that's one of the things that we're focusing on in the district. And then this is all grounded with a focus on equity. And equity for me is ensuring that our young people have great schools close to where they live. And we define great, and we define all of the things that are inside of great, but equity is making sure every child has access and opportunities to success. And so a couple of examples of what we've done to do that is when we had the budget cuts, we stopped providing children the experience of taking the PSAT. Everybody knows what the Scholastic Achievement Test is that colleges use. And we stopped administering that. And when we stopped administering that, we saw a 50% reduction in the children who took the PSAT. But then when you look at Black and Latino children, it was an 80% reduction. And so you could have young people walking around with the ability to do great things, but we would never know if they could do those things because they lost the access to this opportunity. So now what do? We give it to everybody, 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, and any 11th and 12th grader who takes the SAT, we do that during the school day, and any child can take it. And part of that is to ensure that we don't miss any children. We're also looking I already talked about the suspension, so I won't go through that, but really looking, and I know the word assessment then creates all kinds of thoughts with people, but one of the things that we wanted to do was also look at how we identify children for experiences or opportunities for gifted and talent. I mean, children who are gifted and talented. And what was interesting was that there were many schools in the center city, some schools in the Northeast, some schools in Chestnut Hill that had the vast majority of all the children who were identified as talented and gifted. And so we now have moved to a nonverbal cognitive assessment and for all second graders. All second graders now take that. And as a result of that, we identified another 3,000 young people who are in the range of being considered talented and gifted. Another 3,000. Oh, and by the way, when we gave all the children the PSAT and SAT, we identified another 1,200 children who had advanced placement potential, because that's what that's the information you get from that. And what was interesting in the cognitive assessment, we had two children score in the Mensa range, which is at 154, 153 in terms of the IQ. And one was a child who was brand new to the country and was an English language learner. Another one was a young man who was in a very low performing school in North Philadelphia. And those were the two children who probably would not have been identified if, in fact, we were just looking at those young people. And so part of this is ensuring that we set up structures so that all of the young people, regardless of where they are in the city or in schools, have opportunities and access to these types of opportunities. And then the changing of the grading policy, and we really looked at that, and we got a lot of attention about that and around that. And we eliminated the grades of zero. And part of why we did that was because we are on a 10-point grading scale. 10-point grading scale means that 100 to 90 is an A, and 89 to 80 is a B, and it just goes on 10 points. And then when you got to 60, it was 60 to zero was an F. Well, that's not a 10-point grading scale. And one of the things that we wanted to look at is ensuring, no, it doesn't mean that children stop. Children still fail. But if they fail, it's not fatal to them. so that the first grade that they get on whatever the assessment is then is the grade that is fatal to them for that school year. And we are also removing barriers to admissions to certain high schools for admission, particularly in the career and technical education space. And so really focused on equity and thinking about those things. And then we have some recent success stories, and I'll just close with these. These are some things around attendance, and what we're tracking these things on a day-to-day basis now. And what we've seen is 61% of students attending 95% or more instructional days. And this is not average daily attendance. This is the children who don't miss more than 2 days, who have not missed more than 2 days this school year yet. And you can't miss more than 9 days during the school year. But it is making sure that these young people are in school every day. And that's almost a 5 percentage point change from the same time last year. And as I talked earlier, we're going to be announcing high school graduation rates, and really excited about that. And I'll just wrap up with sharing a story that some of you may have heard if you've heard me talk about this. And the I have what's called a student advisory, and these are students who come and meet with me quarterly. And they've now asked to meet monthly, so we're meeting more regularly. They can come from any high school. They can come from any middle school. I've even had elementary students at the meeting. It goes about an hour and a half. They can come from charter schools. I've had children from the Catholic schools, and we've had them from private schools. And they just come in, and we actually talk about policies that are focused on them. And I ask them to be selfish. They can come from any school. We have anywhere from 200, I'm sorry, from about 100 to 200 children attend that meeting. We give them passes. They come down to the headquarters. And at one meeting when this first started, it was the year of all of the cuts. And the children were talking about readiness, and they actually did this agenda. We do the agendas now, but they constructed this agenda. They constructed agendas so that all of the children were mixed and they were at these round tables. And it was about 8 children at each table. And I asked, what do you want me to do at the meeting? They're like, we're going to advise you. So don't do anything. Just walk around, and listen to us talk. And it was great. And it was instructive. And so I went to one table, and at this one table, there were children from Masterman, Frankfurt, which is a comprehensive school in the lower northeast, and Edison. And Edison is, as you know, in North Philadelphia on the east side and almost in the Kensington area. And they were talking about college readiness. I was just listening. And I remember the conversation went something like the children at Masterman said, you know, we can start honors courses when we are in middle school, and you can start advanced placement courses in high school, and we have as many as, and they named some exorbitant amount of AP classes, and dual enrollment classes. So we have dual enrollment classes at Masterman. You can start taking them as early as 10th grade. In some cases, they're ninth graders in some of those. And so there was 2 children from Edison, from Frankfurt, and they looked and they said, we have those classes too. And we have 2 of them, and you can take them as seniors. Only seniors can take them. And then I saw the 2 children from Edison look at each other. And then they looked at around the table and they said, we don't have honors courses. And I thought at that minute that they could be talking about access to science. They could be talking about access to music or arts. They could be talking about a great teacher or principal. They could be talking about a building that's in disrepair or not. They could be talking about bullying or children with special needs or children who are learning English. But one thing that has stuck with me ever since I heard those young people share that experience is that it cannot be left to the lottery, to a lottery, or a child's ability to access a certain school, of whether or not they get a quality education or exposed to opportunities in the school district of Philadelphia. And that happened 3 years ago. And right after that happened, we changed the strategic plan to really focus on equity, access, and opportunity for every single child, no matter where they are. And that, oh, by the way, is if they're in a district public school or in a charter public school, they need access to a great school in their neighborhood. And no longer can we allow zip codes to define what children are exposed to. And so that's what we're trying to do in the School District of Philadelphia. Hopefully this has been instructive for you. Sorry for all the slides, but I thought it was really important to share that information. So thank you for being patient and thank you for listening.